This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Inside Music. I'm your host, George Mariner Moll, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra, where we believe the more musical detail we notice, the more pleasure we receive from listening. Inside Music is made possible by Glenn Mead, an independent trust company providing investment and wealth management services with offices in Princeton, Morristown, and Philadelphia. Welcome to this evening's episode, Thou Shalt Not. For those of you not familiar with this music, that was the exquisite prelude, the opening movement of Pélléas et Mélisande by Gabriel Fauré, played by the Seattle Symphony under the direction of Ludovic Morlot. And for those of you who are familiar with this music, exactly what thou shalt not do is also probably known to you. Thou shalt not commit adultery, good old number 6 from the list of the Ten Commandments. In his famous play, Pélléas et Mélisande, the Belgian poet and playwright Maurice Maeterlinck creates a love triangle between two brothers and one wife. Not a good idea to fall in love with your sibling's spouse. It just never ends well. But the incidental music that Fauré wrote for a London production of this play is some of the most beautiful music that he or anyone else ever wrote. As always at the Discovery Orchestra, we want to focus on some details that might otherwise go unnoticed. Let's listen to the first two phrases of the prelude. As you listen, see if you detect any differences. Could you tell that the phrases were identical, with two important exceptions? The repeat of the first phrase was softer, a dynamic change clearly indicated by the composer. At the beginning of the score, he wrote mezzo forte, half loud or sort of loud. When the repeat begins, he wrote pianissimo, or very soft. And did you also notice this delicious detail? The contrabasses played a pizzicato G natural just as the repeat began. They used their fingers to pluck the string. Listen once more, and if you didn't the first time, appreciate the emotional effect of the dynamic change and the one pizzicato note. Composers like to write sequences, and Fauré is no exception. A sequence is a musical idea that repeats at a higher or lower pitch level, kind of like walking up or down stairs. So let's jump right in. Immediately after that initial repeated phrase, he starts a sequence based on this musical idea. Listen once again. Now here's the entire sequence. Does it ascend or descend, and how many steps does it have? The first iteration is always step 1. Everyone come up with an ascending sequence of 3 steps? Good. You will find many sequences in this movement. Feel their impact as they happen. I wonder if you noticed something else, a subtle change of timbre. The contrabasses play 2 pizzicato notes at the beginning of the first 2 steps in the sequence. But on the 3rd step, they start to use their bows. Listen for this. While we're speaking about timbre, or the source of the sound, while I was attending music school, I learned that Fauré did not orchestrate this score, but rather gave this task to one of his students, Charles Cochlin. As unsettling as this was to me then, now I'm accustomed to knowing this fact and very much admire Cochlin's orchestrations, like this one. He adds one instrument to the mix that had not been introduced earlier in the movement, I'll start the music exactly where this instrument enters. It's doubling the clarinet parts. That is, the two clarinets and this instrument are playing the same notes at the same time. See if you can identify this new timbre. Could you tell that the very delicate sound of the harp has been introduced? Listen again. The harp and clarinets are playing this. If you have ever been in love, or if you are in love right now, you know what this feels like, that sensation of being swept away. There are two of these moments in this movement. What musical devices might you guess Fauré uses to create them? What do you think? Think like a composer. Ascending sequence and crescendo getting louder gradually. The rush at the top is so strong that we have to allow musical time to recover from it. Here's the first one of these events. If you're just tuning in, I'm George Mariner Mole, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra and your host for Inside Music. We're in the middle of a look inside Gabriel Fauré's Pélléas et Mélisandes as Fauré prepares the second climax of the movement. The flute softly enters and hands off the solo spotlight to the oboe. If you're not driving, raise a hand or a finger when the oboe hands it off to the clarinet. The second climax of this movement is even more powerful than the first one. If you by chance listen to my Inside Music episode, The Point, you can be assured that this is it. Here we have that incredible sensation of totally, emotionally, not just physically, losing your own identity as it merges with your loved one. Fauré captures this in abstract sound with no words. The first time I played this work in an orchestra, the conductor, Russell Stanger, explained what this next passage meant to him. He said, "The solo French horn is Pélléas approaching. The solo cello is Mélisande weeping by the well where she has carelessly tossed her wedding ring, an omen of events yet to happen. Here is the music." That weeping theme actually first occurs earlier in the movement. It's played by, well, you tell me. If you identified the solo cello and the flute, you got it right. There are actually two flutes playing in unison with the cello. Just before the conclusion of the movement, the clarinet takes up the musical theme of Mélisande weeping. It is also a test, a breath control for the principal clarinetist of the orchestra. That last note must be held all the way until the strings begin to play their last phrase. Have a listen and see what you notice about the strings' last phrase. So what did you notice? Hopefully that Fauré ends the first movement the way it began, albeit with a foreshortened version. By changing the harmonies, and remember from the episode Change That Chord, how important it is to notice reharmonizations, Fauré brings his first movement to a delicate close. Before we play the entire prelude from Pélléas et Mélisande again, I want to remind you that it's probably never a good idea to fall in love with someone else's spouse or significant other. But rather than dwell on the tragic demise of both Pélléas and Mélisande in this story, let's focus instead as we listen on the incredible manner in which Fauré, using his compositional skills, captures that totally irrational, wonderful, passionate feeling of falling in love. Again, you're listening to a recorded performance by the Seattle Symphony under their music director, Ludovic Morlot. Thank you. This has been Inside Music. I'm your host, George Mariner Moll, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra. The producer was David Ozenberg. The Discovery Orchestra's Emmy-nominated educational concerts for American Public Television are available on Amazon.com and may be streamed free of charge by Amazon Prime members. For more information about the Discovery Orchestra, please visit our website at discoveryorchestra.org. Inside Music is made possible by Glenn Mead, an independent trust company providing investment and wealth management services with offices in Princeton, Morristown, and Philadelphia. Inside Music episodes can also be heard as webcasts at WWFM.org by selecting About Us and then Our Programs A to Z. Inside Music is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org. Tune in for our next episode. One good fugue deserves another. Thanks so much for being with us. This is George Mariner Moll reminding you to listen better.